Welcome to These Lads on Mental. My name is Gary.
And I'm Neil, and our podcast is a lighthearted approach to normalise mental health. But before we start today's show, please listen to our disclaimer. This show is just a group of opinions and is not to be treated as medical advice. If you are struggling with mental health, please speak to your physician or reach out to a service such as Lifeline. Thank you. These Lads Are Mental recognises the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation as the custodians and traditional owners of Sydney. We pay respect to their ancestors and elders, past and present, and value their continuing connection to lands, living culture, and integral contribution to the bright and inclusive future of this beautiful city that we call home.
On this week's show, we've got David O'Connor.
David is an absolute inspiration, family man. He is a high-level CEO. His family also have one of the biggest civil engineering companies in New South Wales. He also has donated over $1 million to mental health charity and has some outrageous goals for 2022 and beyond to generate $1 million per year for mental health charity. He is just a top guy. And as I said, the real inspiration, and we really think you're going to enjoy the show.
Yeah, it's a long drive that, mate. 5.5 hours. Have you always been down the South Coast, or do you used to live in Sydney?
I was in Sydney. I've been in Sydney my whole life. So, got out of Sydney 2 years ago. So, it's been a good change, been a good balance. Just the kids, it's very much more outdoor sort of environment. And country. It's like it's 10 minutes for a place called Bega where they make the cheese.
Oh, right. Yeah. So, is that how you say that? Is that a G? I thought it was a Q. I think called it Becca.
Did you really?
I thought it was a queue because a little line just stops at the bottom of the branding. I just thought it was a queue. Well, there you go.
I have a funny, it's a bit of a dirty story, but when I first came to Australia, I was in Melbourne. We were having a house party. It was literally like within the first couple of months, and there was a load of Irish people there. And there's a saying in Ireland, like if you're single and you go to a party and let's say there's loads of women there, single people, you go, there's a load of gay at the party. And then the guy was like, what should I bring? And someone said, don't worry about anything. There's loads of ghee. And then when he came to the party, he brought like a block of, you know, the ghee, it's like margarine. And he's like, oh, mate, I told you, look, loads of ghee. And I was like,
oh my God.
And then this was like, honestly, this was like 3 weeks in Australia. We were doing a barbecue. And of course, the guy that was supposed to bring a portable barbecue didn't come. So we had to cook everything in like the oven. So we're cooking like burgers and everything, like a couple of hours in a row. And obviously when you smash something like that for so long, it's probably not the best thing. The next thing, the oven caught on fire and the whole thing came up and we had to ring the fire brigade. So the fire brigade came in, had to evacuate the whole house and like rip the oven out of the wall. Just like week two of Australia. And then someone tapped me on the shoulder and said, you know, in Australia, you've got to pay for emergency services when they come out to your house. And I was like, oh my God. Welcome to Australia, spot the immigrant. That was just a bit of a preamble, you know?
Very good.
So, hi, David. Welcome to These Lads Are Mental.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
I can see a noticeable difference in you since the last time we've met, and that's the hair.
Yeah, mate. It's the only young bit left. So,
anyone, well, we're obviously on audio, so you can't see anything, but David has some gorgeous red curly locks going on. It's kind of very
Met Cocknell.
Had a couple of comparisons lately. Yeah, there's a character in Game of Thrones. I had a beard, but it's a bit great. I can't think what his name is now, but he's from the north.
Oh, yeah, I know who that is. I can't remember his name. I know who you're talking about.
But no, it's a bit of fun. Keeps me trying to feel a bit younger.
Alex, classmate, looking suave.
We're even getting way ahead of ourselves. I sent Gary a link to the Webby Awards, which is this like massive, like huge awards thing. I was like, I reckon we should put us in there.
I didn't notice that. I read that link and I thought, oh yeah, cool. There's obviously quite a lot of podcast awards, but then I realized in our category it was like Russell Brand. It was like it was like fourth place. I was thinking, mate, I don't think we're quite there yet.
Yeah, we're up against Joe Rogan, Russell Brand, you know. Tim Ferriss, watch out, guys. Here comes me, Gary.
Obviously, David, pleasure to have you on here, mate. Probably the best place to start is for anyone listening, is just for you to give us a bit of insight into who you are and probably why you reckon we've got you on the show, which of course we know, but it'd be good to know a bit about yourself, where you're from, what you currently do.
Yeah, great. Well, look, I'm born and raised in Australia. Both my parents are from Ireland. Dad's from Kerry, mum's from Dublin. And we ran a civil business, a family business since 1980. And I've been in the business over 25 years now, and me and my brother. And mental health was something we started focusing on back in 2014. And we started sponsoring a charity called Batir because they focus on young people and getting rid of stigma around mental health. My auntie worked at a house back home in Ireland and got us involved in that. And so we started supporting the Darkness Into Light Walk. And that's where I met the boys, the McGees, that run the Light Ball, and Neil. And, you know, we just kind of got talking and we started to do a bunch of things together. And so we've now, you know, set up a long-term relationship around the Light Ball. And our business has been through quite a rocky road too. So we got bought by a big public entity and subsequently they went broke. We ended up buying our business back. We had quite a challenging situation where the people in our business had a lot of change and evolution, and we decided if we were going to buy the business back, it needed to be employee driven, employee focused. And so we started off by, you know, establishing just four core values and a vision, and one of them is around where we care for people's well-being. So that's been a cornerstone of how we've, you know, restarted what is now quite a large business across Australia and New Zealand, and that's been really key. And what we've done with the Light Ball and also what we've been doing with Batir have been core to that. And so now we've just established a five-year strategy around building events across all of Australia and New Zealand to raise funds for mental health and also Batir. We run two events in every state is the vision. And one of them is around creating conversations and getting people involved. And the second one's around raising funds, so which is the Light Ball. So we've just recently established a five-year partnership with the boys from the Light Ball. And we're going to take it across Australia and New Zealand over that period. So that's pretty exciting. And obviously, you know, it's a great topic and it's a lot of fun. So, yeah, it's a real pleasure to be involved in it.
David, so quick question. So is Diona still Diona or has that changed name? Or
no, so it's still Diona, but we've got another business called Caliber. And then we've got a third business called 7Gen, which is around renewables.
Just the three businesses, three. You know, no big deal, you know.
Renewable energy, mental health, brilliant.
Edging toward 2,000 people. There's a lot of people there. And again, the beauty of that is we've got so many people that if we can get them all, you know, focused on, you know, this cause, we can make a really big difference. And that's what it's about. So our vision or our purpose for all three businesses is enabling communities to thrive. And that's really comes back to the core of how do we make a difference in the community. You know, we affect lots of schools, we build communities, and we want to kind of take this concept around we care for people's well-being into everything that we do. And yeah, it's a really cool opportunity, and you know, if we can pull it off, it'll be a legacy that we can be proud of, you know.
Well, we have invited the McGee brothers on, so they're busy lads, and you know, they're like, but they're threatening to pop in at any point of the call, so hopefully we'll make an appearance, but if not, we can do them justice when we chat about the Light Ball maybe later on. But I did want to mention the Pieta House, which you mentioned, and just for anyone that's listening, that's an Irish organization, and that started back in Ireland because if you had mental health and you had a condition, there was nowhere for you to go, essentially. And they started literally out of a house where people could come, you know, stay there if they needed to, get food, and just like start the whole pathway. And that's one of the things, David, we've spoken about, which is definitely getting better, but it's actually part of our things to maybe look at, is like create some kind of a pathway for people that if you do have some kind of mental health condition, like what can you do? Where can you go? Who can you go see? You know, because there's not really a pathway for people right there. So Pieta House was quite innovative in that sense, in terms of it started to be that first step on the ladder for people to try and go and seek some help.
I find it interesting that you said you started all the sort of mental health stuff in 2014. I mean, for me personally, that feels like you're quite ahead of the sort of eight ball in terms of everyone else. I feel like in the last maybe 3 or 4 years, it's really came to the surface. But I think 2014, did you find that there wasn't really a lot going on in terms of mental health awareness at that point?
No, I don't think it's as core as it is now. It is much more, you know, mainstream, I suppose, or normal to really put effort into this. But yeah, look, back then, my experience was we've done a lot of support around cancer institutes, and like I've got a history of some cancer issues, and yeah, that was great. But to me, I felt like mental health and the traumas that come out of it affect people's health, and it causes things like cancer, heart disease, and it goes to the core of an awful lot of health issues that people face. And we were really keen to focus on something that focused on prevention rather than cure. And for me, prevention is about stigma. It's the fact that, you know, our inability to ask for help because we're concerned about the stigma around being mentally unwell or having a tough period, what that means and what people will think of us. And it makes it really hard for people to ask for help. And so in our view, we thought, well, we can focus on stigma, and if we can get rid of stigma in young people, you know, that's, you know, that's really cool. And what's fantastic, I've just actually supported Batir on, they've just reached their 10-year milestone. So there's kids that went through those programs 10 years ago that are now adults. And for me, it's really cool to think that there's now a new generation out there in their mid-20s that, you know, doesn't have stigma around mental health. It's like a broken arm or a sniffle. You go to the doctor, you ask for help, you get help, and you don't have to have all that, you know, weight around what does it mean or what will people think of me. And that's just so important.
That's great.
That's amazing.
And we interviewed Nick Brown from Batir on. He was our first guest interview. Seems like ages ago now, Gary, but a few months ago. You know, we're huge supporters of Batir as well. And I didn't think about it like that before, actually, around that next generation. And like often it's difficult to see how you can fix a problem, but if you just start with a generation, it's amazing how quickly you can flick the switch. But I want to take just a quick step back. So, you know, we've spoken briefly about Daona. You mentioned your Irish heritage. So could you tell us a little bit about what was that like, you know, parents from Ireland coming to a place like Australia and then setting up from a civil point of view, like one of the biggest businesses in New South Wales, or is it Australia? Could you tell us about that story a bit?
Yeah. So look, yeah, mum and dad met. Back then it was the Catholic Club in Burwood was where all the Irish people used to hang out. And that's where they met. I think before they got married, they'd set up the business already. You know, it operated out of the house. Dad had a backhoe. His uncle actually had a civil company over here, but he was somewhat of a prick relation, so he didn't really get much of a go in the uncle's company. So pretty stubborn sort of a fella, so went out and started his own thing. You know, that's where it began. It has been a family company, like my grandfather, my mum's father worked for Dad. My mum's brothers were also worked for the business. And then obviously me at different times. But it was very hard. Like back then, the community, the Irish community in Australia was, you know, like it is now, very, very tight. But Australia was a much smaller place. You know, you had huge concentrations of Irish populations in certain areas. And that kind of Burwood, Ashfield, Stratford area was one of them. So they got a lot of support from that community. And the business they ended up establishing had a huge presence of Irish people, as did a number of their peer businesses in the industry. It, you know, like Italians and concrete. I think it's the farming background, but you know, Irish people love taking on risk and they love digging holes and dealing with big gear and diesel fume. You know, I think that's why there's a lot of those sort of Irish contractors out there that do this sort of utilities and civil game.
Well, it's that whole, you know, the whole thing with Irish people, they say like the Irish people built New York, you know, those photos of the beams with the lads sitting with no harnesses. They were all Irish lads. And then I think even the Harbour Bridge in Sydney, I think one of my wife Sue's friend's great-great-granddad was like the main architect behind that. But I think a lot of the people who worked on the bridge were Irish as well. So it's mad what they've done across the world. I think there's like 80 million Irish descendants across the globe for a 5 million population. It's, you know, it's a crazy ratio.
Yeah, it is. And I think, you know, two attributes of Irish immigrants is one that they're willing to take on hard work. But the other thing is they're willing to take risks. They're all very entrepreneurial. And so I think those two things are why we've got an industry that's got such a strong heritage in Australia around Irish people. So,
yeah, do you know what's interesting from a cultural point of view? I don't know if we mentioned this before, but when I was back in Ireland, if you needed to go to like the dentist or anything like that during the day, you'd have to put in like a timesheet, like, you know, to get an hour off unless it was at your lunchtime. Or if you pulled a sickie or something like that, like the next day, your boss would be standing over you, breathing, going, what's wrong with you? You look fine. And then I came to Australia and I was like, you know, people just wouldn't come in on Monday. It's like, oh, I'm just popping out to
send a text, not coming in today.
Yeah, you send a text at 10 minutes to 9 going, I'm not going to be in today. And I actually think the latter is, I mean, obviously if people take the piss, that's not good, but it's such a better culture over here. I mean, but having said that, Irish people, you're dead right. When you come over here, have this work ethic of they work until the job gets done. Like they don't clock watch, you know, it's not like, oh, it's 5 o'clock, I'm going to knock off. You have it ingrained in you. Like if this job has to get done, I'm just going to do it. And they'll come in on weekends and they'll do all kinds of sorts. So yeah, it is definitely a good trait of us Irish people.
Well, it is, and I think it's also one of the biggest challenges for Irish people. I grew up working with a lot of those kind of Irish guys that worked on Snowy Hydra and those iconic projects, and you know, I inherited a lot of those attributes where you're constantly got this. For me, I think the lesson I've gotten out of that is Irish people are susceptible to mental health issues because of the amount of pressure, and I'll use the word stigma, that they place on themselves around what work ethic looks like, what it means to be a good worker. There's also this kind of respect thing that we have for each other, and we don't speak out of school. We tend to, you know, when there's a concern, you're not out there. Like Australians, they're great at vocalising their concerns. And I think as a culture, if we're generalising, and it's a huge generalisation, but I think our culture is more so to keep our head down and our bum up, and that doesn't always support great mental health. And I think when we first started taking this focus, for me, that was really clear. When I was cutting my teeth up, you know, coming up through the business, I felt like I had to earn my stripes. I had to work harder than everybody else or the person next to me to get that respect, because it was really important. And that was what was in my culture or my heritage. But I think ultimately I put huge pressure on myself, and I ended up having, you know, anxiety and issues. And it wasn't because of the pressure others were putting on me. It was the pressure I was putting on myself. Mm-hmm. And I can see lots of young people in our industry. We've got lots of, whether it's professional engineers in the business, young Irish guys, or whether it's people out on site. Now, they put huge pressures on themselves, and they have these expectations that they carry around. Today, we are so much better at, COVID's taught us a lot of things around work-life balance. You know, people are now able, particularly in white-collar roles, to, you know, if I've got to go to the doctor in the middle of the day, like you said, or those things are now completely acceptable. And we all have permission to do that, whereas I think we didn't give ourselves permission previously. But there is still a big gap, and it's probably those blue collar people out on site that haven't had that reprieve or those opportunities that things like COVID have brought up, and they still do wear an awful lot of pressure around work ethic and how much time they spend on site. And
The construction industry really didn't stop at all. So for most of the rest of us, and I think you're dead right, COVID certainly put mental health on the map in terms of the average Australian and average person in the world, right? Before that, it was, still early days, and it's kind of fast-tracked so quickly now. And even working from home, I worked in an American business before COVID, and they did have a work-from-home policy. But whenever someone was working from home, there was always that little, you know, was he on the beer last night, or like, what's going on? Whereas once COVID came in and everyone had the, you know, the technology and the setup, that all just went out the window. And now it's just become a normality, which is really good. But then construction barely ceased, right? So they were carrying the burden of COVID and providing and, you know, all that kind of stuff and that fear factor, but they still had to get out and work 8-10 hours a day, you know, it's like they were under a lot of stress in the industry. And did you see that from working in it? Like, did that elevate, you know, amongst your staff over the last 2 years, maybe more than the average person?
Absolutely. I think, but I also think, you know, people in those white collar professional roles, and we have a lot of those people in our business, they have an outlet and a voice to voice their concerns. They get heard, and you know, management and others, leaders respond to those concerns. But again, I still think there's a huge cone of silence that sits around what people are doing out on site and in those, you know, hardcore blue collar roles. They're not getting the levels of support, and the stress levels are incredibly high. I think I know across our whole business, while everything's been going really well, people just, they really need a break. It's been a long 2 years, and just getting in front of their families and outlets they've had haven't been there.
It's the first time actually since I've been here nearly 10 years. It's the first time in that whole time that I've heard Australians say, I just cannot wait for Christmas. Because I think normally in Australia, not that every day is a holiday here, but you can just go 2 hours down the coast and here in Sydney and you hit Jervis Bay, you can go to the Hunter for a weekend. Like a lot of times, like I feel like we have a really nice balance of life here in Australia generally, but this year it feels like everybody is at that complete boiling point. When lockdown 2.0 or 6.0, if you're in Melbourne, hit, people were just, I think this Christmas is probably like the biggest Christmas ever in terms of that chance for people to recharge. And again, thinking of the construction industry, and then imagine if you're an Irish guy who they don't complain. Like I'm thinking of my dad, never complained a day in his life, and he's worked so hard. And then in the construction industry, where generally I think people don't complain either, they just get on with it. And for Irish people, it was always the kind of, let's just get on with it. You know, you have a beer at the end of the day, and that was your way of getting over it. So when you compound all that together, yeah, I mean, I've never thought about the construction industry, but they've probably had it. Some industries have had it where they haven't had any work, and that's a whole different problem, where construction has had the other end of the spectrum, probably too much work and holding all that pressure compared to everybody else.
Yeah. And I think there's that culture too. It's a human culture, but it's definitely an Irish one, which is make hay while the sun shines. And while there's plenty of work to be done, everyone wants, you know, jams in and gets it done. And, you know, it's been a long 2 years without a break. So it is definitely an issue.
And can you tell us, you mentioned the goal that Diona had with Batir. So can you talk us through what that goal is? And right now, where are they? Have they hit it? Are they on the way? Or?
Yeah, yeah. So back in 2015, we said, look, by 2020, we wanted to reach a goal of raising $1 million for Batir. And it was with the support of you know, groups like the Lightball, we were able to, you know, take an event and go bigger. You know, have been a huge part of that support. And we raised $1 million by 2020. So that was really cool. Got to hand them over a big novelty check, but now we've refocused on you know, where to from here. And
$2 million.
Well, I really think once we hit our straps, we're probably $1 million a year is what we could do. We kind of established that goal. It's probably more of a 2026 goal. So, you know, if we can get these two events in every state up and running, you know, we've also focused on, we want to focus on Batir, but we also want to focus on other local charities. So, you know, some great examples of where there's, you know, we want to make it something that's a bit more nimble so that the people that run the committees in each of the locations can drive, you know, some of the regional and local issues. So Batir is a focus, and we're saying, look, 2/3 will go to Batir, but the other third will, let's go find a local charity that supports this initiative around taking care of people's well-being and see what we can do. So I think, look, you know, we've been a bit slow to start with the whole COVID environment, but next year is quite a big year for us. We're looking at community events in kind of March, April in Sydney, Brisbane, potentially Adelaide, Canberra, and Perth. By the end of the year, we're really hoping for light balls in Sydney, Brisbane, Melbourne, and Perth. So, you know, that's a pretty big step up from where we all are now. And that's pretty exciting. But, you know, the following year, chuck a couple more states in there and a couple more events. And I think we're comfortably delivering $1 million of funds a year to this cause.
Phenomenal, mate. Phenomenal.
Yeah. Well, we should put really a donation button or something on our website and page, you know, to kind of help you guys out. Every dollar.
$5 a week.
Yeah. Well, I think the main thing is, you know, it's about supporting the light bulb. We've got a great cause there, but we're for your Sydney viewers, we're looking to run potentially something like a community fun day. So, you know, just, you know, barbecue, maybe a little digger that people do a competition on, you know, tug of wars or whatever. It's kind of a bit of fun and get, you know, all sorts of people from the community involved, and just raise a bit of awareness and have a laugh, but also to kind of raise awareness for that light ball event later in the year. So that's the aim.
Yeah, and the light ball, which we've spoken about in the very first episode, Gary and I just kind of had a chin wag as a bit of a pilot. So people, listeners to the show will already know about it. But at the height of his game pre-COVID, I think we had 1,000 people at one of the balls, which is unreal to think, like 1,000 people at a black tie ball all supporting mental health. And what's that statistic? Like, the average person will tell something, or if they've done so, if they have a positive experience, they'll tell at least 10 people. So there's like 10,000 people, like just with one night, not to mention all the lead up and socials and so on. We actually were trying to always put a figure on what our reach was, but you know, you could argue that was maybe, you know, 50,000 plus across the whole year in the lead up, maybe even 100,000, which is like, again, we often say like, oh, you know, things aren't going to make a difference. I'm too small. But like by you going and getting your bum on a seat or something like that, it really can make a difference. And I remember the stories we would get of how people like saving people's lives because they finally found somewhere that they could be a belong, you know, and could open up. So yeah, it really is a credit. And even with the light ball in Sydney, it's kept going during COVID. They did a smaller event, I think, the first year of COVID. And then I think they even did a catch up last year as well. So yeah, just a phenomenal group of people. So hopefully, is it going to happen in 2022? Is there a date yet, or is it still working through?
No, so it'll definitely happen in 2022. Nothing will stop us. So, and I think there is a huge amount of energy and there's lots of people that want to get involved. So we nearly rushed one in before Christmas in the hope we'd get a gap in COVID, but COVID kind of squashed it in the end. But no, look, absolutely. And I couldn't agree more with you. Whenever you have any of these events, I think Darkness and Delight is another great example where the amount of conversations a session like that would create amongst people, whether because they're going to it or someone in their family knows they're going to it or just conversations they have during what happens in the event.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but that's where the light bulb first found you or vice versa, right? Because you were in the darkness into light first, right? Could you tell people about what that is in case they don't know what it is?
Yeah. So look, Darkness to Light, obviously it's an event that Pieter House started. And obviously, like you said, you know, there's Irish people all over the globe. And so, you know, morphing that event into a global event was something that happened quite naturally. And look, I love the concept of the Darkness into Light and the what the event created. And so I think they had their first one in 2014 from memory. And there was a bit of there was a lot of pressure on individuals to get that event up and running. And so I saw a gap and we hopped in as a business because we had lots of heads and many hands make light work and kind of got that up and running and then took more of a role nationally to kind of make it easier for volunteers to be part of that event. And so I got a good bit of structure in there and were able to support Pieter House. Ultimately, look, we're not as involved in that event anymore, and that's because we're really concentrating our efforts in this particular issue and being able to make a broad event that's really locally focused. I think, you know, one of the challenges is Pieter House supports Irish people because they've got familiarity from back home, but when they're here and when they become, you know, residents in Australia, it's about really getting that local content. We want a really diverse group of people being involved where we bring that, get the strength out of that Irish community, but also pull in all the other communities so we can make a much bigger difference. And that's where we're going with this event now.
Yeah, that is a challenge for charities, just generally, you know, where people are donating and then they don't know where the funds go. And even though Pieter House was an amazing organization, I know the lads at the Light Bulb were kind of like, we want the money to stay here and help like local Australians because they're the ones we're kind of representing on that behalf. So, but yeah, I think it's the Darkness into Light. The amazing thing about that is it's such a simple idea. It's, you know, you start a walk before sunrise in May, so it's dark, and then by the time you finish the walk, which is it's 5 kilometers, it's bright, so it's like sunny, so you're kind of walking from dark into light. And I actually think the Darkness into Light, because that was where Will, Mick, I think myself had all gone to that first one, and we all messaged each other going, this is one of the most amazing things we've ever done. It was just so emotional. It's probably a more heavy hitting emotional event than, let's say, the Light Bulb, because the Light Bulb is about having fun and, you know, you're having a few drinks and whatnot, whereas the Darkness into Light is like, we did a minute silence, I think, before every time we went out on it, and it was just wow, like you could hear a pin drop. And but you know, even to your point, I think it's credit to you, like, you don't, sometimes you have to pass the baton on with these things. You know, you cannot be involved all the time. You cannot do too many things. So don't beat yourself up, because I think like it's the same with me. I was on the Light Bulb for a while, and then you know, you move on, you pass the baton, and it's time for somebody else to take it to the next level, you know. So
Oh, definitely. And I think one of the things that you've got to be really, we're certainly very passionate about, is you double down on what your passion is. Sometimes you've got to be willing to you know, give up some of the peripheral things, because you know what the core focus and vision is, and to go give it everything and get the most out of it, you've just got to give it all of your commitment. And so that's what we're doing.
Sort of stepping away from that, David, and going towards you as an individual, I know you've obviously had your own mental health story. Would you be okay getting into a bit more detail with that for the listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. So look, I was in a pretty senior role at a young age and took on a lot of responsibility. I was really eager to succeed and put a lot of pressure on myself. When I was 29, I was the general manager for the business, but I was also running a project in Victoria, and you know, there was a lot on the plate, and I got non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and that was quite a shock. I think it was my body telling me that I needed to change some things. Unfortunately, I didn't really listen. So as soon as I got over that, I got straight back into it, and a year later, I got it back. And I think at that stage, I'd actually started to have, I didn't know what it was at the time, but I had some anxiety attacks. And I started to look at, you know, doing things to help my mental health. I started, you know, meditating, and what I found was that really helped. Unfortunately, I didn't really use that power for good. I saw that I could actually get more out of myself by doing, taking on these sorts of practices and techniques. And so it was just a way to supercharge what I was already doing. We then, you know, decided to sell the business because it made sense for our people, provided bigger opportunities. We could become part of something bigger. But it supercharged stress levels in our work environment. I basically ran into a brick wall. I got non-Hodgkin's lymphoma for the third time during that process. We tripled our business during that time. That's when I started helping Pieta House and Bitir. It was just a time where there was just so much going on. My health suffered, my marriage suffered. You know, I was in a complete mess. I had some really significant mental health challenges. My way to deal with that sort of thing was to, it was like what I did externally, you know, could help create the change internally with me. So what I was doing with those charities was very external, but I still wasn't really focusing on the internal. And for me, I've actually since our business, you know, the overall business that bought us nearly went broke. And so that created a lot of stress as well. Again, still dealing with cancer and other things. And, you know, I hit an all-time low and, you know, just was really felt very alone and had a lot of issues around my anxiety. I was obviously quite exhausted and I knew I just needed to stop. After we finished kind of the sale process of our business, we'd hit some really significant goals and I decided I wanted everyone to celebrate and we called it reaching the Cranogue. So I don't know, you know, what Cranogue is, but back home, a Cranogue is a place where, you know, it's like a safe haven, a big stepping stone. It's oftenly, you know, almost like got secret access in the middle of a pond or something. And it was a place of security that you could, you know, defend. So that was, that signified a lot of what we'd kind of achieved. And during that process, went to every location that we had in the business and held a big ball event where we raised money for the charities. But I also got up there and I shared my experience around my mental health. And the reason why I did is because I felt like I always had this kind of appearance on the outside of everything was fine, you know, everything's positive, I'd have a bounce in my step and I could be dying on the inside and no one would know. What I realized that also created an environment in our business and with the people I was working with where they felt that pressure. You know, they were under pressure too. They were struggling too. And they were looking at someone like me and saying, well, if he can handle all that and he's still ultra positive and whatever else, you know, I must be inferior. And they would put more pressure on themselves. And ultimately, the pressure I was putting on myself was inadvertently putting huge pressures on other people. And it was only at that point that I could see that. And so I really felt like the veil had to drop and everyone had to know actually someone like me who was leading that business was really struggling. And you know, it was to give them permission that they could also struggle too and they could put their hand up and ask for help. And so that's why I go back to the comment I made earlier in the podcast around, you know, that Irish culture and that heritage of hard work and earning your stripes and all those things. And you know, that was the pressure I was putting on myself. And I feel like as a community, but also definitely my work community and the broader community, we need to give ourselves permission to drop the veil, say, you know, we all need help. We all deal with these sorts of challenges. And it's okay not to be okay. That's kind of my journey. That's why I'm here. I'm very lucky now. I've actually really slowed down in the business. I chair the board. I no longer essentially run the business day to day. I get to have passion projects where I dive in and cause all sorts of havoc. But I can step out from that and I've moved to the far south coast with my family. You know, I'm not in the hustle and bustle. We've got a life that's outdoors and I've got a lot more time with my family and it's been great. And I've given myself permission to do it, which has been fantastic.
That is superb, mate.
That's phenomenal. Amazing. Yeah, we had a guy called Hugo on a few episodes ago who survived cancer twice, but I think you've now beat him. You've three times.
That's three to David.
3-2 to David. Back to you. Here we go.
No, I'm not back to you.
I was very, very lucky. Look, the sort of cancer I had was, you know, one of the ones that, you know, you can manage. It's not like one of those ones where you go, you've got, you know, 90 days to live, but it's also not curable. So I've got to deal with it for the rest of my life. And it's a constant reminder of the fact that I need to take care of myself, because I want to be here for my kids and I want to be here for people I love. And, you know, it's a great reminder. But even then, I could still forget it. So I get excited by shiny things and, you know, I get very passionate about things quite easily. And so I've got to keep myself in check. But now, look, my health is in, I'm in the best health I've been in a very long time. And, you know, getting involved in events like this where there's just so much goodwill and positive energy, you know, is a real, you know, value add to my life.
We can confirm that David is in a stationary position, so he is very calm and relaxed as we do this podcast. But I love that statement you said. I never heard it like that before. Like the realization that the energy that you were projecting was actually rippling onto your employees, and that for me was like, that's like a real aha moment, because if you're the CEO or the boss, you're actually promoted with culture and society to do the opposite, to be that legend, that strong person who works at their ass off, and then that inspires everybody else. And I just think that's amazing how I've never thought of it that way before, that in actual fact that can actually start the complete opposite effect on those who are working within your business. So yeah, wow.
Well, it's actually since I've slowed down, and I get to look at all the leaders in our business, and we've got a lot of young people that are, you know, very, very hard working, very similar to the sorts of things I've described. And I feel a huge responsibility to those people to help them learn the lessons that I've learned without having to learn them the hard way. And it is the cliche. It's very hard to teach people those lessons. They have to some extent, go through them themselves. But I think it really comes down to just being genuine. You know, I think for me, I found a much more genuine version of my leadership, which is, you know, when it's tough or when it's hard or when I'm struggling with something, actually just to be really genuine and you know, get in contact with that emotion that's going on the inside, because people really thrive on that, understanding that, you know, it's okay to have a bad day. It's okay for what we're doing right now to be really challenging. And it's okay to throw our arms in the air and get, you know, excited when we conquer that. And I think for us all to be connected to those emotions so that when, you know, when we are having a tough time, people can see it on your sleeve and you're more able to get that help because people notice. And I've had people come up and say, when I get particularly emotional about a topic, say, oh, Dave, I noticed you're a bit revved up in that meeting. You know, how you going? I'm like, actually, if I was to go back 5 or so years, they would have never known. So for me, that's, you know, it's a positive sentiment that I'm much more in contact with that and therefore taking care of my health.
One thing I wanted to talk about, this is sort of off, it's on topic, but off the script sort of thing is, I mean, mate, personally, from listening to you, mate, and I wasn't fully aware of you until Sully mentioned you, so you're obviously quite low-key, but the things you're talking about, I mean, I absolutely admire what you've done, mate. You've been successful in your own field. You've have the self-awareness to step away when you had to. You've then got that higher meaning of looking after your family. And then above all that, you're using your success for good. And for me, that's my personal goal for what I do in my field is, again, tied into this podcast, everything else, and mate, 100% credit. You're an absolute rock star in your industry, so credit for that. What I'm thinking in my head is there's probably lots of people, and you 2021, the whole world's about the grind and the hustle, and everyone wants to be an entrepreneur and all the rest of it. What would you, because obviously you must have seen a lot in your industry. There's probably boys and girls in your industry who want to have that mentality, and just like you were, and you can probably see a little bit of yourself in them. What advice would you give those sort of people? And like, what would you advise to be, well, not necessarily to go and donate to charities and all that sort of thing, but if they just want to succeed in their field?
Yeah, I think there's two things. And I think one thing is that life is definitely a marathon. It's not a sprint. And, you know, when you're feeling that pressure in yourself, you're like, I can't keep this up. It is because you can't keep it up. And, you know, when you work hard, you've got to have another outlet. So if you're working at 110%, you need to take more leave, you need to take more time off, you need to take care of yourself, or you need to have an outlet that, you know, allows you to maintain that balance. And not everyone's in that position. You know, we're very fortunate in this country and in other countries to have that as an option. There's many people in the world that don't have the ability to actually pause and take care of themselves because it's about, you know, surviving. I think for us, you know, that's really, really important that we take that time because we've got the ability to have a quality of life. And and it actually goes to your long-term success. If you can be consistent and steady, that is far more valuable than a flash in the pan. And so it's a real patience. As young people, we, you know, we struggle to have that patience, but it's so key to have that patience so we can, you know, something that you can do. It's like training, you know, you're training for an event. You can't, you know, train all in the last 2 weeks, you'll fall over in the event. But, you know, if you train steadily for the 12 months leading up to that, take the right rest, you'll end up being far more successful. And so that is definitely true. And then the other thing is actually just to really be in contact with what's going on in the inside and be the genuine version of yourself. So whether that's, you know, whether that's a good day or a bad day, whether you're, you know, super calm and happy, or whether you actually fall off your perch and lose your shit, they're all healthy emotions. And they actually get to the point much quicker. I have a saying, I say it a lot, which is fail fast. So, you know, if you're in contact with that stuff, and if something's not meant to be, it won't. And that's fine. So it's that acceptance around just being your true self. So they're the two things for me that I think are vitally important.
If any of David's employees are listening, please tell us how often he said that tagline. We've gotten to know. all the chairman's reports. I also love what you just said there as well. We mentioned, well, I don't know if Gary agrees with me, but I hate that term, be the better version of yourself, because then it creates this never-ending inertia of being content. But you've just said there, I've actually been trying to think of what's a better, this is a bit of an oxymoron, what's a better version of that actual statement? And you said something there, to be a genuine version of yourself. And I was like, wow, that is a cool little way to frame it, because you're not setting any like goal with that. It's just about you being real, being present, which is what we've talked about so many times on the shows, about being present in the moment is better for you in the long run. So I might have to rob that one and call it my own.
Please do.
I mean, 10 years from now, Solly, you'll be on a podcast going, here's a saying I say all the time.
Yeah,
I can't. Be a genuine version of yourself.
I'll be on the TED Talk going, you know, I just found this idea, and you know. We'll cut this out of the show, don't worry, so there's no evidence.
I think a lot of the other things we're going to talk about, I think we sort of touched on early on. So I would be interested to know, when getting away from the work side of things, what do you do in your spare time? Obviously, family's a massive part of your life. You're out there in the South Coast. What do you do for fun? What do you do to relax, chill out? What you're interested in? What are those things?
Yeah, absolutely. I've moved to a place in the far south coast called Tathra, small farming community on the beach. So we spend a lot of time on the beach doing nippers. There's a lot of mountain bike trails, so I do that. And then we're close to the snowfield, so in winter we spend a lot of time at the snow. So for me, that time outdoors has been really, really important, because getting connected with nature is one of the best ways to take care of our mental health. I mean, it's one of the reasons why, you know, it's much easier to have a positive mental health in Australia than somewhere, you know, like the other side of the world, where we get so much sunshine, and that makes such a difference to our mental health. It's a proven fact. And so for me, it's getting outside and getting connected with nature and being with my loved ones. So I do have lots of family, you know, that aren't here. So, you know, trying to connect with them is really important. Yeah, that's about as simple as it is for me. So get outside, get an adrenaline rush, and have fun.
It sounds like you don't have this problem, but as you said earlier on, there are people in this world that are less fortunate, let's say, than we are here in Australia. And sometimes you do have to kind of pinch yourself and go, you know, I've been complaining in COVID, going, I haven't been overseas in, you know, 2 years. The last time I was away was Vietnam, and, you know, I can't wait to get back to Bali or like Fiji. And you're like, God, like, you know, they're like beautiful things to do. But in the grand scheme of things, sometimes like you have to really just put yourself into check and go, like, we're lucky to be, like, Australia is probably one of the best places in the world to be for COVID. As you said, we had the sun, you could still go to the beach. So yeah, I mean, sometimes we do have to put ourselves in check, right?
Mm. Yeah, well, I think it's gratitude. And I think when you look at other cultures and other nations that are far less lucky than we are, a natural culture in a lot of those places is this form of gratitude. So even though they've got so much less, they are grateful in many cases for so much more. You know, that's something we all need to take. It does take a real mindfulness to do that. And I think we've all got room to improve there.
Yeah, that's probably a better way to frame it, actually, more from a gratitude standpoint rather than what I said earlier on, which was like kind of almost complaining about it. You know, I'm actually really bad at gratitude. Gary, you're better. I know you like write down your achievements and stuff. And I think Irish people are a bit like that generally. We're not very good at gratitude towards ourselves. So maybe it's more about just like appreciating your where you are rather than trying to, you know, feel bad about it. Or yeah, because you're right. Like I remember I went to the Philippines and, you know, met guys who had like, you know, soccer jerseys that were ripped on their back that brought us out in boats, and they were like just the happiest guys on earth. Like, and they were just, you know, sometimes you almost feel jealous. You're like, oh, I wish life was a bit simpler, you know, because you wouldn't have all these stresses that we carry, you know, in everyday life. So yeah, happiness.
What's that little short story? It's like some successful businessman goes out to a Spanish fishing village, and there's a guy sitting there with his beer, with his fishing rod. And the guy says to him, oh, can we go out in the boat with you? He comes out, he gets lots of fish. And the guy goes, oh, you were amazing at that. He's like, you've got so much fish. Why don't you start a bigger business? He's like, well, how do I do that? He's like, well, you get fish, you charge tourists this much money, you get a bigger boat, then you get more fish and you get the people who work for you. He goes, then what? He goes, then you get a bigger boat, then you go international, you make a fortune. He goes, then what? He goes, well, then you get to chill out with your beer and fish. He's like, I've been doing that the whole time, mate. I mean, I've been doing that the whole time.
I love that story. I think it's absolutely epitome of gratitude and acceptance, and there's so many other nations that have got this, you know, in their culture, is, you know, really well understood. I think it's something I love to surround myself with people like that. We just celebrated a 15-year anniversary for a lady in our business, and she joined me. English was her second language. She was from Iran, and she's been in our business for 15 years. She's grown with it. She is so grateful for everything that happens to her, and she's one of the most humble people I've ever met. And I just love to spend time around a person like that, because for me, it's a great mirror to look at and say, you know, actually, that's the thing I want to connect to, because I think ultimately that's where happiness comes from. So, I think there's two sides to it.
Yeah, 100%. I think gratitude is so powerful, and we don't appreciate it enough. And there was a huge study over, I think, the course of 30 years that was only released, I think, last year or the year before, which actually showed immigrants perform or give back to the GDP. I think it's twice as the average citizen does of any country. And that was like, I think, a global study. And yet, you know, there's still that stigma in that topic that, you know, letting people in and borders closed and la da 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 da. But if you give someone a second chance at life, they're going to repay you back in troves. So like, that's a whole nother podcast that we need to set up about. But yeah. I wish we could welcome more people into this country, because it's such a huge country. Like you said, it was a small country maybe back 20, 30 years ago, but there's such a vast amount of space here, and there's so much innovation going on, and we have room for more, you know, so.
100%.
And I wanted to ask one question, David. I mean, as Gary said earlier on, your story in itself is super inspirational, you know, just as inspirational as anyone else you would see, you know, on a TED Talk or anything else out there, for so many reasons. But you're obviously a very altruistic guy. You give back, you've met so many challenges in your life. Like, where does that care factor come from? I mean, I could be biased and say it's the Irish in you, but do you think it's environment? Is it nature versus nurture? Your parents, how you were brought up? Like, what do you think set that off inside of your own, you know, psyche?
Look, I think both my parents definitely were very, have been very giving of their time and their energy to the community. You know, we got involved in a lot of, and there were a lot of Irish events when I was younger. So I think definitely my parents and that culture. Look, I think the other thing, I am a pretty emotional sort of a guy. I think I haven't been in touch with that for a lot of my life, you know, because I've been when I was younger, I was trying to be that, you know, professional sort of persona. And for me, actually just getting connected to emotionally what gives me a feeling of doing the right thing, you know, it gives me a great deal of happiness. And I think I've been far more connected to that in the last couple of years than I had when I was younger. So I don't know. It's probably the short answer, but I certainly had some very good examples in my parents and my family.
Brilliant.
Yeah, you're a family man, David. And I think Neil probably can connect to this question more than I can at the moment. But what's dad life like? Obviously, being a successful CEO and did everything else you're doing.
How many kids did you have? The Irish nine kids, or?
No, I've got four children. One of them I don't get to see halfway. Anywhere near as much. So you know, that's one thing that I wish I was better at. But you know, I've three children I've got down here. They're just they make me a better human, and I think for me, again, what children bring is they're very much in the present. They're very, very grateful. For me, it's about trying to, you know, just be present with them. Because I think when I was younger, and I think, you know what, it's actually a lot of your listeners are, you know, probably in that bracket where, you know, a bit like you, Neil, you're just having your first children, you're, you know, you're working, you're trying to deal with mortgages, you're in the peak of the work effort in your career. And those things don't meld together very, very well. It's very, very hard for so many people having a job, paying off a mortgage, having children and everything that comes with it. And then this is when people have issues with their mental health, is because there's no room, there's no space. And I'm just very, very grateful that, you know, I'm still young. I've just turned 40 this year. And I'm having that time my parents never got at this age. To really focus on my children and my family and my health. You know, I'm just very, very grateful for that. So for children, you know, there's nothing more present than a child. So, you know, if you can get on their level, you know, playing with toys, taking on characters, like you're just there and you're nowhere else. And, you know, that's the essence of being present. So.
Yeah, the only one thing I would say about dad life is there's always cliches attached to everything. But for dad life, the cliches are 100% true. Every single one of them. Sleep, stress, like, oh my God. And that's all. I only have one. So I have a bit to go to catch up with you. But oh my God. I always wanted four, but now I'm like, ooh.
Yeah, well, I originally told my wife 10, but it was a very foolish statement because I didn't know what was involved at that stage.
And so what's next for David O'Connor? Like, let's say 2022 and beyond.
I'm very fortunate to be where I am my professional life. And it's really about focusing on building a values-led business for us. So for the next couple of years, it's just about steadiness. You know, I talked about that marathon rather than sprint, and that's what we're setting ourselves up for, is just a steady marathon and a legacy that we can be proud of. I get more and more time to do things like what we're doing with Batir, and then that is an intention to continue to do that. But other than that, I've been really, really future focused my whole life. I've always been not focusing on where I am now, and I've been focusing on 10 years into the future. And so for me, I've never been in a place where I'm generally just dealing with today. And as much as I get to do fun stuff around looking at the future of our business, you know, for me, it's actually just been focusing on what we're doing now. So even for the first time in my life, you know, even my little projects around the house and stuff, they're just focused on what I'm doing this week and next week, not about what I'm doing, you know, 5 and 10 years into the future. So for me, that's been a real gift. And for me, I really want to stick in that vein. So I'm not going to try to get too far ahead of myself. I'm going to fall into the next thing that happens and just enjoy that process.
Maybe a fifth child, or I don't know.
No, I don't think so. We get we get a burst of energy around that topic every now and again. we are 40. Not that that's old, but I think, you know, we're grateful for what we've got. We're really grateful for what we've got, and we keep coming back to that. So,
I mean, it is what you've just said there as well. You know, most of the time you go for an interview, people will ask you, where you want to be in the next 5 years and everything. Yeah, you're right. Most of us are always thinking about the future, the house, the mortgage, the next job, the pay raise. So I think that's also like your train of thought there is quite refreshing as well. It's like, maybe we just need to think about the day and be present, because when you do that, you know, all the stresses hopefully won't be as severe. So yeah, I like that.
My dad used to say to me, he said, just remember the problem you're having today won't be there next week. But, you know, what I do find is when you take all of that material that sits around in your head and you think about the material that's either focused in the future or focused in the past, and you just take those two things out of your head, there's pretty much nothing left. And it's much easier to be happier and grateful and present. So, you know, the future and the past are two things that really don't support our mental health. And the present is the one thing that does. So,
wow.
That's for, I'd actually do that, that little exercise quite a lot. So, like a little brain dump. But what I'll do is I'll just get a big, had to start buying the like A5 bits of the big squares of paper, because just visually I needed to write it down on a bigger bit of paper. So I'd just write down everything that was in my head. But then I'd only circle the things that are literally, I can affect me within the next 24 to 48 hours. And I would look at it and be like, it's two things. Like, I can probably do this in the next 2 hours. Like, I could just rattle it out and it's done. But until I'd done that, it's such a powerful exercise. It takes 10 minutes and you instantly just go, oh my God, relax, man. There's nothing there. I do have to do it a lot. I have to do it probably the next day as well, but I have to do it a lot. But it's
put my clothes on.
but also that issue around the past. You know, we're always kicking ourselves for the smallest things. And folks, oh, but if only I'd done this, or you know, and again, it takes such a huge portion of our headspace. So you know, those two things gone doesn't leave much more room for just now.
No, I love that.
So we finish every episode, David, with a little quick fire questions. Literally one or two word answers, four questions. Good to go?
Yep.
Okay, sweet. So first question, when are you at your happiest?
Right now.
Ah, yes, on the podcast.
out of 10, where do you think the world is currently in terms of mental health awareness?
I think we're a 6.
Out of 10, where are you currently with your own mental health?
About an 8.
And if you could recommend just one thing for people to do each day to improve their mental health, what would it be?
Just to focus on the now.
Great.
Superb. Lovely.
You failed that test, David, so we can't air the podcast now. No, it's actually really interesting because we're going to tally all those scores up at the end, and Gary and I have some ideas. There's so much good advice, like even that last one there about living in the now. Imagine if we just collated all those little bits of advice in one little toolkit, like people would have so much up their sleeve. So yeah. Watch this space for a bookstore near you sometime in the future.
No, look, Gary, Neil, thank you so much for having me. It's been real fun actually chatting to you. So, you know, really, thank you very much. And I look forward to, you know, hearing more of your podcast.
Oh, thanks, mate. And I say this about, well, we say this about every guest, but we wish there was more David O'Connors in this world. They're doing some amazing things. And if anyone does want to get in touch with you, David, or find out more about your business, where can they find you? You're a hard man for Gary, our research diva, to track down on the internet.
I think if you just Google David O'Connor or Caliber or Diona, there's definitely the easiest way, Google. And my email address is david.o'connor@calibergroup.com.au.
That's dangerous. You might get some stalkers or fanboys or fangirls.
Fanboys. Well, I think, to be fair, there's a lot of, it's easy to find a lot about you, David, in terms of from a business standpoint. But like I've mentioned already, I think you're massively inspirational of all the other things you're doing. Obviously, there's a little bit about what you've done with Batir, but like just the simple things that you've mentioned in terms of like what you're doing now, you've moved away to be spending more time with your family, and what you've done to giving back to charity, and how your business is focused around those values. There's a lot, it's very easy to find out how successful you've been. But I think those other things to me is, which makes me look up to you even more, which is amazing, mate. So credit to you. And I'd encourage people to find out, or at least listen to this episode to see the amazing work you're doing.
Oh, no, look, thank you. I've failed enough times to figure a couple of things out. So, thank you so much for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
Oh, you're amazing,
mate. Spot on. Thank you very much.
Thank you for yourself, guys. See you later.
Thanks for your time, mate.
Cheers, nice
mate.
To see you. Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye-bye.
See ya.
Oh, what a legend. He's so cool, isn't he?
Ah, he's a legend, man. That's an absolute hero, man. He is. What a guy, man.
Don't forget to follow us on all the social media channels, including Instagram and Twitter, @theselandsaremental. And if you do have a topic or a guest or subject that you want us to talk about, please do get in touch and send in your suggestions. Thanks for joining us on today's show. As mentioned at the beginning, if you are struggling with mental health, please do seek further assistance. Here's who you can get support from: Lifeline, Beyond Blue, Batir, and the Black Dog Institute.